Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Text 51551. Drive Time on RTE Radio 1.
You're welcome back. It's been reported this afternoon that the Israeli Defence Forces have taken control of the Palestinian side of the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt. Humanitarian aid officials in Gaza say the flow of aid through the crossing had stopped as fears of famine loom large in the territory. Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, today called for the Gaza crossings to be reopened immediately. Israel launched attacks on Gaza yesterday, hours after an announcement by Hamas that they would accept a ceasefire deal that would lead to the release of Israeli hostages. For the latest from Gaza now, I'm joined by Louise Wateridge, who's spokesperson for for UNRWA, the aid agency who's based in Rafah. Louise, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Where are you exactly in Rafah at the moment?
So I'm currently in Western Rafah. So the last couple of days have been able to see just out the window, even though the evacuation orders are to the east of Rafah, a lot of people, even in the west and center of Rafah, have started to pack up the makeshift shelters that they're in and move out of the city. And as I speak to you now, even you know, from the rooftop that we're sat on, we're watching bombardments over Rafah. So it's really been a very distressing 48 hours for the population here, 1.4 million people who are currently sheltering in Rafah.
What are the conditions like for them there?
A lot of people are living in makeshift shelters, so not even tents really are available. They're living under plastic sheeting. There's a lot of wooden, basically anything that people can find, they're trying to make into shelters. Even old food bags and food aid packages, they're kind of stitching together and living under. We had a bit of rain the other morning, and you know, it's just horrific to see how the water comes into people's shelters on the ground. People are sleeping on the ground. There's no waste distribution. A lot of trash is piling up between these makeshift shelters. So the situation here is just, it's beyond dire. It's really unbearable.
Do they have food and clean water, Louise?
Food is very limited. Certainly over the last 7 months, people have struggled to find and find food and feed their families. My friends and colleagues here, I've seen them for the first time in the last few weeks, and they are noticeably very, very thin and unhealthy looking. They're really wearing every day of the war on them, on their faces. And in terms of water, even in Rafah, where humanitarian agencies have been quite set up for some time, there is very limited infrastructure to provide people access to clean, fresh drinking water. So the population surviving on less than 1 liter per person per day at the moment, which is just horrific.
So quite weak in terms of physically, and I'm sure mentally as well, which wouldn't have been helped by the real roller coaster last night, Louise, the acceptance by Hamas of the deal, the expectation then of the people of in Rafah and elsewhere in Gaza of a ceasefire. Can you describe to me the moments when that news broke there?
Yeah, exactly that. So the last 48 hours have been a complete roller coaster. There were lots of talks and hope. You know, you couldn't speak to anyone here without them bringing up the potential of a ceasefire. Everyone was excited about it. Everyone was very hopeful towards such a ceasefire happening. Then we had the reality of the nightmare, waking up yesterday morning to evacuation orders in the eastern part of Rafah. This was a really awful and distressing reality. Most people here in Rafah have already been displaced 2, 3, 4 times. So this is not the first time they've been forcibly displaced in the Gaza Strip. So having such an evacuation order is completely traumatic to this population and to the families here. Fast forward to last night, you know, out of nowhere, we were hearing screams and cheering and chanting. So we rushed to see what was going on. And, it felt like the whole of Rafah were just overcome with emotion. I saw women in the street just crying and hugging each other. The relief was just pouring out of people. Children were doing cartwheels and running around. You know, you could just feel so much joy around everybody at this news that a ceasefire had been agreed by Hamas. And you know, a very subdued morning followed, very quiet this morning. I was watching out from around 5 or 6 a.m. The roads were very quiet. People were very quiet. And as the day has gone on, there's been a weight of the day. There's been more traffic on the roads. There's not a lot of transport available, but I've seen a lot of movement today, more than I have in the last couple of weeks, and as people have started to pack their houses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are just packing everything they have on top of vehicles and leaving Rafah. So that's the way the day has ended, unfortunately.
Where are they going to, Louise?
It's a very good question. I don't have an answer. If you ask different people, they say different things. I think decisions are based on perhaps finding family members and reconnecting with family in different areas. Certainly no place is safe here. Some of the decisions are being made depending on family members, in the sense that, you know, my colleague has some elderly parents that really limits them from being able to move so much. A lot of people have very young children. That's also very limiting. So people are just trying to get out of Rafah for their immediate safety and fear of what is to come or potentially come here. But there is nowhere to go. There's nowhere safe. There's nowhere with sufficient infrastructure. There's not one cohesive place that everybody is aiming for safety. It's very chaotic, and people are just very desperate to leave Rafah.
And then there are the conditions. It was about 40 degrees or so Celsius last week. The unsanitary conditions that you described to us, the lack of food and clean water and so on. And then people who might be frail or elderly who can't go, even if they wanted to evacuate. Do you fear for the safety or the lives of those people?
Yeah, we had a really awful experience when the weather did hit these high temperatures last week. It was 40 degrees Celsius. So inside these makeshift shelters, which are completely covered in plastic, the temperature was probably double that. And unfortunately, that actually caused the death of some children, because the heat was just so much for them. And you can imagine they're very weak at this time. They're very malnourished. They don't have a lot of water. So this was a real warning for people here of what is to come in summer. The temperatures do get very warm here. And it's just a devastating and very preventable reality. And as you say about elderly people, you know, we've got sick, you've got injured. It's just so hard to understand what people are going to do. It's not easy for anybody to move overnight and in such a short space of time with such little means. But, you know, people who don't have any help, don't have any support, for these people, it's not even an option. I've spoken to a lot of colleagues here in Rafah who have family still in the north. They have elderly parents still in the north that didn't even make it through the first forced displacement months ago. So it's just a horrible reality for people trying to survive.
Intense starvation, the lack of aid, famine in some areas based on who you talk to. The UN Secretary General said today that the closure of both the Rafah and Kerem Shalom crossings is especially damaging to an already dire humanitarian situation. They must be reopened immediately, he said. I'm sure you'd agree with that, and you see evidence of it, do you, in front of you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have words anymore. It's been 7 months of this war, and we keep saying, as you know, the humanitarian organizations on the ground here, that we aren't getting enough supplies and people need more. But you can walk around anywhere in the Gaza Strip and see the needs. People just need everything. If they've lost everything, they need everything. They've lost their homes. They've lost their families. They've lost their friends. They've lost everything they've ever known and loved. and there's nothing available. You know, you have women in these shelters. I was speaking to a woman, Raheem, the other day, and she has a two-month-old baby. She's making nappies and diapers out of cloth, dirty cloth on the floor, anything she can find. It's just not acceptable to have people living this way. There needs to be more aid coming in. The crossings have been shut today. They've been shut yesterday. People need aid. They need food. They need water. They need everything. And it is not acceptable for this to continue, that these people are suffering in this way.
UNRWA, I know you and your colleagues have decided to stay in Rafah, but surely, Louise, there will come a point where you say the conditions are even too difficult for people like you who work there, and you have an option to leave. Have you considered that?
For the agency, it's very important that we are staying in Rafah. We are not facilitating this forced displacement. We will continue to provide services for as long as possible. Our biggest concern at the moment is if there's no fuel and no aid entering the Gaza Strip, how long we will be able to provide these services for. So we really need these crossings to be open, and we really need this aid to come in to be distributed, because otherwise, yes, there will be UNRWA colleagues here. Yes, there will be staff here. The majority of our staff are part of the displaced population. I was in Jabalia camp last week with a group of doctors and nurses who have stayed running the health clinics and health centers in Jabalia camp for the last 7 months. They're not receiving the cash because there's no cash in Gaza Strip. They are away from their families most of the day trying to provide services to other people. I mean, these people are just heroes. It's really unbelievable to meet people around the Gaza Strip working for UNRWA who are just continuing day in, day out to do whatever they can to support their community. So I do strongly believe UNRWA is going to do everything it can as an agency to continue to provide assistance to the community, because they're part of the community and they are meant to support each other as much as possible. What we really need is the aid to keep coming in and the fuel to come in to run the operations.
Would that be your message then to the Israeli government? Or what would your message be? Because I note what you say about the health facilities and the people who work there. And we did speak with a doctor who worked for a time at the European hospital, and he described the really difficult conditions that are being faced by doctors and healthcare staff and patients there. But as you sit in Rafah today, Louise, what would your message be to the Israeli government, notwithstanding the fact that I don't know if they have much faith in UNRWA, but what would it be?
I think you just have to think about all the civilians in this situation and think about the people that have been suffering for so long. You know, it's been 7 months, and it's not acceptable, as our Commissioner General has said on multiple occasions, to have a collective punishment of people. And what is happening in the Gaza Strip at the moment is a collective punishment. These are families, there are young children, there are elderly. These people, until 7 months ago, they led very normal lives, still under blockade, still very difficult, but now living under a complete siege in a war, it is just not acceptable for people to continue to live this way. It's not living, it's surviving. And when I'm speaking to my colleagues here, there is a very clear definition of, you know, the life that they had before and the way they talk about their lives before, and then the reality that they've had the last 7 months. And everybody just wants to go home. Everybody wants to go back to their apartments, even if it's rubble. They want to be rebuild. They want to find their families, and they just want to live.
That could take years and years and billions of dollars, as we've been told, that rebuilding their homes and so on and the infrastructure. And I know that Israel would say that this operation is targeted at the last few battalions of Hamas operatives. But as you sit in Western Rafah, Louise Waldridge of UNRWA, I thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme.